Jobo Sanapito, this is TabilePod.com coming to you from our makeshift studio here in the Ministry of Defense of Georgia. We're sitting here with the minister, Iraklio Asania. I will not go over his biography because, frankly, he's so famous that you all already know it. And we'll get right into the questions. Thank you very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
First thing I wanted to ask about, and one of the first things that I remember you mentioning in the position is conscription. And you said that there are going to be some changes to the conscription arrangement. Can you talk a little bit about the draft in Georgia and where you want to head with that?
Right. Well, there's a lot of things that we talked about when we arrived at the Ministry of Defense, and one of them is, of course, the conscription. One of them is the idea of transforming Georgian Armed Forces to fully professional army by 17. We adopted the minister's vision, which talks about this, how we are going to do this, and I believe that the professional officer, professional serviceman is better for the Georgian Army to have, and I think it serves country more effectively in general, and this is why we came out with the plan which will get Georgian Army fully professional by 17. So it means that conscripts will go down. Actually, we already made an amendment to the law that cuts down from 15 to 12 months the service. At the same time, we're going to be gradually decreasing the number of the conscripts by 17. At this point, 75% of our army is already professional. So this is why it's going to be, I think, more effectively done by us if we're going to gradually come down to the fully professional army by five the brigades that we have. But at the same time, we're building the system of the reserve, which will have the territorial, operational, and civilian reserve system put in by 17. So we're doing this parallel.
So it's not obligatory to be in the reserves, but there still will be reserves.
Absolutely, there will be reserve. And we already have a plan for this. We're putting together the financial calculations, which is already over, and we are also involving the experts in this system. We had the experience already from Norwegians, from Estonians, as well from the Switzerland as well, incorporating into our thinking of how to put out the reserve. And mainly it's going to be done in parallel. So by 17, when we're going to go fully professional, we're going to have already in place the full cycle of the reserve preparation.
Speaking of reserves, I remember some strange conversations about, with air quotes, reservists in Samagrelo during the campaign period, that there
right.
were that there were some individuals that were sort of being told that they were reservists. What was really going on?
Right.
With that?
I remember you discussed it a lot on your podcast with your colleagues, and then it was probably shocking for you to believe what I was saying, but in fact, that's exactly what was in place. We found out that there is up to 1,600 people with the weapons put into places in Mingrelia and other places with quite a little of accounting what kind of weapons they had. And they were told that they were in territorial reserve, but in fact, they were under the control of the Constitution Protection Department, and they were under control of the Special Operation Department, and they were paying cash to them. So what we did, how we addressed this, is that there are a lot of people who were in the service before, and we gave them a chance, who doesn't commit any crime, of course. We gave them a chance if they want to stay in the army and all stay in the special brigades in the and the special, I would do the segments of the Ministry of Internal Affairs to serve, but they have to qualify. So we went through the training and qualification period, and some of them failed, better part of them failed because they were not fit, but some of them stayed. So what most important, that those who did have kind of patriotic duty they felt to wanted to fulfill, they have a chance, they are already in service. What's most important, I think that the weapons that they have is already accounted for, and they're in the right places. So that's how we dealt with them.
And so do they have these weapons at home, or are they sort of in, you know, special? I know the Swiss are very, very careful about where they keep the where weapons are kept and that sort
of
thing.
They have to control it. They have to be safe. But in this regard, they were carrying the, themselves in the houses, some of the houses that they rented. So the problem is non-existent anymore, actually. We dealt with this. We're happy how we accounted for every single weapons that there was.
Now, with the end of conscription, I mean, as an American, I have to say that, you know, the reality of it is there were not a lot of people in Congress who had sons who were serving in the military when we decided to invade Iraq. And you know, I do think that there is, you know, an advantage, say, in a society like Israel, where the military is used as a sort of a tool of national unification. You know, don't you think that there's a place for the military bringing people together? Now, I know in Russia it was sort of supposed to have that, and it was a way, in fact, for the Russian language to be taught to a lot of people. But I mean, the Dedovshina and, you know, hazing and that sort of thing was such a problem there. I guess it probably was counterproductive. But, you know, isn't there the danger of a purely professional army in Georgia maybe not having sort of the democratic checks on it that, you know, a randomized collection of recruits might provide?
Well, first of all, I myself was a volunteer in the Georgian Army in the 90s, and I remember what Georgian Army looked like at that time. And I also went through some of the training in U.S. Army, where I saw the professional army, how it's performing. And I believe, it's my strong belief, that the soldier is someone that believes in being soldier, that something believes that it's a destiny for him. And I do believe that the people who really want to be soldiers, we don't want to be officers, they have to be professional. And they're going to have the more effective ways and knowledge to defend this country. Of course, what you're saying, connection between society and army, that's exactly what I think our engagement of the society with the army will help. There's a lot of projects that we're putting together, army families, how we're going to support our wounded warriors, and also the reserve. Reserve will be exactly the way how the society member who is not a professional military can contribute. So I think it's a very good mix and combination. I was in Bulgaria a few weeks ago and also saw their experience being moved from the Warsaw Pact military through the fully professional. And we actually went through the mistakes they made. So we are very mindful of the mistakes other states made. But I do believe that professional army is the best way to keep the country guarded.
And what about women?
Well, I was surprised how many women want to be part of the army. And I'm receiving a lot of letters and emails on Facebook that they want to serve. And we're going to provide full opportunities for them. Actually, I already have that in mind when I increased the participation of female in the decision-making in the defense sector. We have a deputy who is very actively involved in that. And we're taking this very seriously, that the Georgian women should be fully have opportunities and be involved in the securing of our country.
Including combat?
That's something that we already are thinking about, because we have women in Afghanistan, but they are not in combat units. And I think this is something that we have to think through, because there's a lot of countries that are now cutting down the size of the participants in the combat units of the women. So this is, I think, something that will come with the practice.
What about defense and interior? You know, there's the Shabna Bada troops. There's been a lot of discussion, frankly, pretty surprising discussion at how public it has been by the Prime Minister and the public defender about some allegations related
right.
to, you know, related to some things going on, you know, north of Tbilisi relating to the Shabna Bada troops. Do you see any interesting for you to comment on that this discussion was so public, first of all, and then second of all, just looking forward, I mean, do you see any changes in the relationship between interior and defense troops?
Well, I'll start with this relationship, which is becoming more strong and more coordinated. Actually, we, with the Minister of Internal Affairs, agreed that every month we are having the meetings on the highest level, ministerial level and deputies level, to coordinate among each other. We established a special unit that will coordinate specifically the special operations forces of Ministry of Defense and the special troops that the Ministry of Internal has, Shabna Bada. they are going through the staff training, and they will go to the full-scale operational training later down in the year. So we established the links that ought to have these two ministries, if we want to really have the coordination that is needed by the security threats that we are facing. Now, Lopota case, which partly was a disaster because there was a mismatch and miscommunication between two ministries. There was also rivalry involved between the head of the ministry and the ex-minister and then prime minister. So all of this partly was caused by the miscommunication, and there was no sufficient planning before the operation between two Ministry of Internal and Ministry of Defense forces. So this is what we are trying to eradicate now. The second thing, how public the discussions went, of course, I made also my position known openly that Georgia, the intel and operational information that is in my disposal at this point suggests that there was never any cases that Georgian government was supporting or sponsoring terrorists. Of course, this discussion would have been better if it would not happen publicly. And I had a chance to talk also with the public defender explaining the information that I had with him, and he agrees that it was a little bit far-fetched, and hopefully he will mend this actually rhetoric to be more substantial, and he needs to focus on the facts that needs to be investigated. But this kind of allegations
and human rights, you know.
Yeah, and human rights, of course. Yeah. So this kind of allegations, I don't think it has any grounds.
Now, about like one of the traditional difficulties for the Georgian military, and certainly something that NATO people have talked to, have discussed with me, is just command and control. Is there the whole method of command and control of Soviet Warsaw Pact troops and of NATO troops is just quite differently organized. And what's happening there in terms of changes?
Well, thank you. This gives me an opportunity to talk actually not only on command control, but also the whole philosophy of governing with the civilian ministry and also the Joint Chiefs. First of all, we brought the culture of accountability within the ministry, that the civilian ministry has the policy-making, actually, powers, but he doesn't have the power and should not be involved in operational or tactical decision-making, which militaries are good at, and militaries are professional for this. So this is why we divided really clearly the lines between where the ministry is involving itself and minister, and where the chairman of the Joint Chief and deputies and militaries have to say. So there's a clear division. Politicians will not involve.
Unlike in Okhrosvili's day.
Absolutely. This is one of the cases. And unlike the combat situation in Tsin Valley,
right,
where unprofessional politicians were giving out orders and militaries were silenced. And this is why this actually incoherent response to the Russian aggression brought so many casualties. But this is the different talking. But what we did was, at the same time, our priorities is, of course, what was the problem and deficit in Georgia before, long-term planning. So planning, budgetary planning, and also planning on the personnel is something that we are putting our emphasis on. I have a deputy who oversees the personnel management, which means the human resources and the education together here, and there is a deputy on the...
And I've heard she knows what she's doing.
Yes, and also I have the deputy colonel who's involved with the same responsibilities in the military side, which is Colonel Chachibaya that we brought from state where he was working at the embassy. So they know their stuff, and this is why we put together selection commission. Every decision on promotion, every decision on sending someone abroad for studies, every decision to send someone to work in a military attaché abroad is made by the selection commission. So there's absolutely less and less chance for the nepotism, which is very important, and politically or personally biased decisions. So when we put this in place, this is where I think that we are achieving a very good results, because we have very good officers who are just coming up, which have education abroad in the West, and also they went through the combat experience and training in Afghanistan, in Iraq. So this is now time for these people to be in charge of the militaries. I don't have anything against those who were defending the country and studying in the Soviet-type military academies. We have to pay respect to them. They can advise in a lot of different ways, but now it's time to build a new Georgia's new army, and this is where we're going.
What about procurement, which has also been a traditional difficulty?
Huge headache. I'll tell you, I was surprised, actually. I worked in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I worked in the Ministry of Security. I was counterintelligence officer back in early days of 90s, but I've never heard anything like this. Secrecy that I encountered in this ministry. When even toilet papers are bought and were bought through the secret tenders. I mean, it was amazing how culture of unaccountability was imprinted in the service. So what we did actually, we already made over 60 tenders this year. 60 tenders. And these tenders are open. These tenders are on the webpage. And everybody can monitor. What we did also, we involved NGOs in monitoring the progress of the reforms and also tenders. So this is something that I think more accountability will be built in by the chances of the civil society to be engaged, involved, and the chances they will have to check us. We are volunteering. We are actually proactively volunteering to have the more parliamentary oversight. We just initiated law that requires me, we initiated this law, every spending above 2 million, every purchase about 4 million, I have to obligation to report the details to the Defense and Security Committee. So this is how we are putting the accountability in a procurement service as well. Of course, the tenders and open tenders is something that we're putting the culture in.
All right, now let's look a little outward. I sent out on Twitter a call for questions. We've had a few. Here's one. Chevy promised NATO membership. Misha promised NATO membership. Both failed. What makes it different this time?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that they failed. Shevardnadze started knocking on the door, as he then called it, to NATO. And it was a start. It was the start of our realization that our identity, our security will be better guaranteed if we're going to be part of this major political and military club. Then I think he did a lot of good job, Shevardnadze himself, in realizing of start the first steps. Like then we started military cooperation with the United States. First JTA battalions were trained under Chevy's presidency. Then Saakashvili came and he furthered and expanded this relationship with NATO. No doubt about this. Forget about the mistakes he made. I mean, one thing is clear that the NATO was a clear foreign policy objective under his presidency. And what is most important, there was a plebiscite where people voted openly that we want to be part of the European family and Euro-Atlantic community. So this is something that he extended and he never promised that membership. I would say. So this is why I think it's a work in progress. Both presidents did what they could. Now it's up to us to further expand our relationship. And this is why I think that the creation of NATO Commission, NATO-Georgia Commission, was a big step. Also, we had the expectations that we could have get MAP on the Bucharest Summit, but we got the words that says that Georgia will become the member. So this is working.
The Prime Minister has said MAP in a year. I mean, is that...
Yeah, well, I share his optimism, but I would not go that far saying what kind of actually the name of the progress will be. It's up to us and up to NATO, and it's up to our progress, how we're going to demonstrate to NATO where the progress is. So what I mean is that we need to keep in mind that it's a progress, and I believe the NATO membership is there, but I don't think that we all expected that in coming these years, the membership will be realized. This process is very important.
Sure. And so, speaking of progress, I mean, what are the areas that you see as the steps that need to really be taken? Okay, you talk about procurement. I mean, everything that you're saying is sort of part of the whole NATO effort. But I mean, what do you think that? What are the steps that the ministry is taking right now that can specifically be rewarded by NATO within the next several months?
Well, I think what NATO looks for is concrete actions and steps. We, as I mentioned, are putting in the place of high checks and accountability on the Georgia's defense spendings. We concretely made a step and became the members of NATO Building Integrity Program, which is the program that actually oversees the anti-corruption work inside the Ministry of Defense. we became the part of it, and I think we're going to be leading member of the Building Integrity. We're working very hard with Transparency International to make sure that they're going to also come up with the assessment that will be really better than it was the last year. At the same time, we involved the three working groups of the NGO community that will monitor and report on the progress of Georgia. Next step will be demonstrating our readiness to the North Atlantic Council that will come down here in June. I'm going to be speaking with the NATO Ministerial and NATO Georgian Council in early June. And we have a plan how to address and the upcoming summit that will be there next year, how to demonstrate our progress. So, or our plan, defense plan, we're ready to demonstrate this. Judicial reform is going to be very important to demonstrate that we have progress there. Justices and the court system, how we are ensuring institutionally there's not going to be politicization of these two. Actually, the court system, which Teat Sulukian is working very hard together with the parliament. Of course, the cohabitation, that is now a famous word about with the national movement, is something that they are measuring our political maturity with. And I think we're moving along pretty well. On defense sector, we selected together with the president, the chairman of the Joint Chief. We agreed on SDR, which will be signed soon by the president. That is going to be also the document that will really demonstrate that in defense, security, and foreign policy, we agree on things rather than we disagree. So I think we're better off now with our, and odds are good to have another step in progress.
Well, sounds pretty good to me. Now, what about Germany? Another question we got from Twitter recently. There was an open forum to discuss strategic cooperation between Georgia and Germany. Your comment was, quote, "There is a new chance Germany will be a patron of Georgia's Euro-Atlantic ambitions," end quote. So how is that relationship going to happen? I mean, traditionally, you know, what everybody's heard is that Germany has been, you know, had some real concerns. I wouldn't say that they're Russia's protector, but they've been the one most nervous about the whole European relationship with Russia and a potential problems there. So how could this
work? Well, for a second, let's talk about Georgia-German relationship, how it started. And Germany was the first of those who rushed to help Georgia after the regaining of independence. And Germany and Georgia started with a special relationship from the very beginning. And they had a lot of, input in Georgian political and economical and military assistance. I think Germany, of course, is the country that can play a huge positive role in normalization of the relationship between us and Russia, because they have traditionally good relationship with us and with Russians as well. And Germany is the main key decision maker in the NATO Council. And we want to make sure that they understand that Georgia is not bringing with itself to European and Euro-Atlantic security our own baggage of the mistrust and the polarization with Russia. This is why the policy the Georgian new government has of a pragmatic relationship with Russia, establishment of trade ties, it helps us. And recently we had a strategic kind of dialogue that was helped by Atlantic Council of Georgia and Henrik Bolt Foundation, and I was attending, and I saw the new opportunity there, really, with the Germans, that they can be the, actually, take a patronage over the Georgian integration to Europe and Euro-Atlantic community. I saw this because Germany, as I mentioned, has invested already a lot in Georgian militaries. They invested in Georgian NCO school. They invested in general in promoting and expanding our thinking how the logistics should work. I'm planning my trip to the Germany this year. We included in our bilateral working relationship also how we can learn from the Germans to build the military infrastructure and military logistics. So there's a lot of things that I think will be instrumental.
The whole state procurement system was essentially a German project. It was a very good one. I mean, it's been really very
they're
very
the one of the best in the world. Mm-hmm. And Germany is the biggest European country, strongest European country, and natural ally of Georgia. So why don't we do everything that we can to make them understand that Georgia success depends on them, and also Georgia being success, it's their foreign policy success. So this dialogue is going well.
Good. Good. Well, I hope Russia allows it to continue to go well. Now, we've had questions from someone from Armenia about after the Batumi meeting of the foreign ministers of Azerbaijan, Turkey, and Georgia. You commented that Turkey and Azerbaijan may consider joining the annual military exercises held by the U.S. in Georgia. Can you talk a little bit about that, and also about Armenia cooperation and how the
well?
The,
also,
the
movement, let me start. And, you know, let me start with saying that Georgia is blessed that we have such a relationship with Armenia and Azerbaijan. Actually, Georgia has also with this the huge convening power to accommodate some dialogue even between Armenians and Azeris. But in due time and whenever these two sides will need us. But at the same time, it's a fact that we have strategic relationship with Azerbaijan because we have strategic projects together, which is Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan, Baku-Erzurum. Now we're building the Qars-Halkalaki Railroad. So this is all the strategic, I would say, projects that will make our region stronger, whole region. And I do believe that in the future, the Armenia will be part of it and Armenia will benefit from this. Today, Armenia is hosting the Russian base. We all know this, and this is kind of a threat to us as well. And we are talking with Armenians about this threat. And I'm sure that Armenians will never allow this base to be used against Georgia. This is the assurances we are getting by Armenians, and we are instrumental to Armenians to their communications.
Certainly WikiLeaks illustrated that in 2008 the Armenians were getting very nervous very quickly about that.
Absolutely, you know. And they are always a great partners of Georgia. We have trust within each other. Now, in terms of the training within Azeris and our Turkish friends, we're already having this kind of exercises on a staff level. We had one in Turkey a year ago. And we're going to continue this. We're also looking at the options of our military industries to be involved together to think how we can provide better services to our soldiers. But let me express and stress again, it will never be used against our Armenian interests. So we are very clear about this. The Georgia really cherishes this relationship that we have with both countries, and we can continue being instrumental if they want to make contacts and to facilitate some of the meetings between these two sides. At the what I wanted to stress that Armenia, I think in the future, will become full-fledged kind of beneficiary of the projects that we're doing together with Azerbaijan and Turkey. But in its time, we have to be patient. We understand it's a very sensitive issue that between Armenia and Azerbaijan cannot be judged by Georgians because it's their own business. But we are here, stand ready to use this convening power Georgia has if they're going to use it.
Now, to the, as I used to say back in the day, the northern neighbor, you've said your goal is to see one of your, quote, main political objectives is to have Russia fulfill its six-point ceasefire agreement, which the Russian president signed in August 2008. And sooner or later, the Russian army will withdraw from the occupied territories. So, first of all, I mean, is that really possible? And second of all, what practical steps do you plan to take in the future to have this obligation fulfilled?
Well, obligation is there. Nobody said it's the parties are not obliged to fulfill it. It's just silence that everybody understands that practically this is not going to happen in today or tomorrow, and this is why nobody stresses hard enough that we would like to see it. But basically, if you're going to see the history of Georgia for the millenniums, Georgia was sliced up many times by the foreign adversaries, but Georgians then stood up and stitched our country back. And this is exactly what's going to happen. I have full confidence in my people that we're going to make sure that we're going to reintroduce ourselves to Abkhaz and Ossetians in a way that we'll start thinking about the coexistence. But at this time, Russia has the 10,000 troops in both territories. They're occupying them, and they're not thinking about leaving anytime soon. This is why I think the pragmatism in our policy with Russia, to start talking with them on trade-related issues, cultural, humanitarian issues, that will give us more space to develop ourselves,
to develop
our institutions, and also to have a more space to talk with Abkhazian Ossetians.
No question about it. And
7-10 years from now.
Okay, but isn't at the same time doing a body dive for NATO somehow a bit of a turnoff to the Abkhaz?
No, I don't think it's a turnoff, because they understand that as soon as Georgia will say no to its option to become the members of the NATO or members of European Union, Russia will swallow us. And they don't like to be...
And they ought to know.
And they know it. And they know because for the last years, they're not happy with how they're living under the Russian occupation. They don't have options, other alternatives at this point, but they will in the future. And I'm sure that in the future, in Europe, together with Georgians, they will opt for this future rather than staying under the Russian occupation in future, for foreseeable future. So I see, as you're going to go down to this road of more talks, more confidence building with Abkhaz and Ossetians, more and more opportunities will turn up itself. Because I've been there, I've talked with them, I see these opportunities. If someone doesn't see it today, doesn't mean that it doesn't exist in the future. So what we need, the stability for coming years to talk with them, to demonstrate we're friends, not enemies anymore. So this is why we need these talks with Russia on trade and other issues, normalization and pragmatism in our relationship to give us this space. Mm-hmm. We don't have illusions that Russia would change its position on Georgia's integration to NATO or territorial integrity in coming, years. But what we want to do, not give them any pretext, any chance, any reason to attack us aggressively, politically or otherwise.
All right. Anything else that, I mean, I'm, you know, as anyone listening can tell, I'm not really a hard security guy. This is not my my sector. But, you know, anything else that listeners ought to know about in order to understand what the plans are for the government? We'll talk again, say, in a year and a half. What kind of things should
we
talk about?
I think we can talk in summer after the North Atlantic Council visit, which is going to happen in late June. And we're also going to have a big security conference. And your invite is there as well. You're welcome to come. Georgia Security Conference, which will be held in Batumi. A lot of VIPs and pretty important people, decision makers, will be over here. And we can speak about the progress that they will measure with them and with us after this.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Irakli, thank you very much for taking the time. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Looking